Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. We start with the good, and Jim, it turns out more and more people are coming to the conclusion that we suspected they would, and that's that Obamacare is not good for them. And the Kaiser Family Foundation has polled on this consistently. A record low for support in the latest survey conducted in July, 53%. Now they view the law unfavorably, an increase of 8 percentage points since June. And the people who conducted the poll are vigorously scratching their head, trying to figure out why such a huge jump, since the 8-point jump is the biggest they've ever seen. There hasn't been a lot of stories lately about people getting kicked off their coverage or bad website problems or things like that. The bad news is 6 and 10 still would rather keep it and improve it than just scrap it. But overall, it's certainly not going to be a winning issue for Democrats this year, it seems like.
The numbers going in this direction is not really surprising. The pollsters themselves are surprised that something in the past month would accelerate this trend. And so they're kind of scratching their heads over it. It's theoretically possible it's some an unusual sample, but you know, the intriguing thing is also it correlates with a big drop in the number of people undecided. So people are basically coming off the sidelines and coming to their conclusions. And I can't help but notice that out in California, they said that the premiums for health insurance for the past year have gone up anywhere from 22% to 88%. Now, those premiums kicked in at various points during the past year, but maybe for some reason, we're getting towards summer, people are trying to spend, you know, go on summer vacation. And all that discretionary income, they thought they were going to have it. Oh, where is all my money going to? And they see their health insurance premiums. Finally, it begins to connect in their minds. Weren't the Republicans saying something about something was going to make me pay more for health insurance? You know, and all of a sudden, also, didn't the president say he was going to save me like $2,500? And then here I am paying away more. So the Democrats have been insisting, no, wait, but once people see it, they're going to love it. And in fact, the numbers are going in the opposite direction. Obamacare definitely has kind of like slid out of the top headlines of the last couple weeks and months. That's not because of people really warming and funny and lovey. It's just that, you know, border crises, Russia, Ukraine, Middle East blowing up, ISIS, and Ebola, and other things like that. So my guess is an Ebola outbreak would really get Americans to start thinking about their health care again, access to doctors and hospitals and paying for it all. And we'll see what happens on that particular front. But I think the odds of Obamacare being anything but a serious liability for Democrats anytime before November is extremely unlikely.
On to the bad martini now. And yesterday's political drama happened in the House of Representatives. It was supposed to be the last legislative day before the five-week summer recess. The biggest thing on the agenda was the $659 million bill addressing the border crisis. Ultimately, House leaders could not cobble together the 218 votes to pass it, so they took it off the schedule. Then, in what passes for drama in Washington, they called everybody back, some of whom were at the airport. They were going to keep trying to hammer this out till we at least get a vote on this and hopefully, from the leadership's perspective, pass something. So they had a meeting yesterday. They had another meeting this morning. By the time folks hear this, who knows what the status of it will be. Jim, obviously very embarrassing for the brand new Republican leadership on their very first day in office, for Kevin McCarthy, the new majority leader, and Steve Scalise, the new whip. At the same time, a lot of folks on the Republican side wringing their hands and being very upset that they look terrible for not addressing this crisis before they were about to head out of town. At the same time, folks supportive of the leadership position here, more focused on what this would have done in putting the Democrats on the defensive than really talking about what the bill would have accomplished. So very confusing in no matter which way you look at this.
They're meeting this morning on Capitol Hill. I'm hoping House Republicans can get their act together and unite on something and pass it and then put it in the hands of the Senate and President Obama. Now, I know Harry Reid has said he's not going to pass it. I know that Barack Obama has said he would veto it. Fine. You can't talk about this being a crisis and this something that requires immediate action and then go on a several-week recess, what everyone will interpret as vacation, and not do something. So the first thing is I hope every Republican realizes you have to pass something. And everyone would say, Jim, isn't passing a bad bill worse than passing no bill? No, you have to pass something, okay? Now, the next question is, let's say there's, you know, different ideas. Some would like to say a, you know, some would say a softer approach to these kids come across the border and the amount of funding the administration wants and all that stuff. And some might say a harder line approach. From everything else we've said on these podcasts, what I've written on the campaign spot, Morning Gold, by comparison, I am a hardliner on this. However, if I don't have the votes for the hard position, better to pass the soft position and then put it in Harry Reid's hands and Barack Obama's hands. If nothing happens, and it's quite possible that nothing's going to happen in response to a giant humanitarian crisis on our border that dominated the news for a week and then rapidly is disappearing from the headlines, you notice, that this basically is you have to do something. You have to look like you're trying to solve the problem. If Harry Reid wants to say, no, we're not going to vote on it, fine, then Harry Reid gets to be the bad guy. If they get something through both houses of Congress and it goes to Obama and Obama vetoes it, then Obama looks like the bad guy. But the House Republicans cannot say, yeah, we can't unify around anything, so we're not passing anything. You've got to pass something, guys. Even if it's not what you want, even if it's a little softer than you expect. Look, sometimes you're going to have these circumstances in which the most bold or dramatic or, you know, in many people's eyes, effective solutions are not the most popular ones. And that the ones that are most vanilla, most milquetoast, perhaps only marginally effective, it's easier to build a broad consensus around them because they're not controversial. Well, sometimes you got to take your half a loaf and get it done. And in this case, you have to pass your half a loaf just to say you did something because you've been screaming for the past 6 weeks that you need to do something. You can't say this is a crisis and then say, yeah, we couldn't agree on any solution, so we didn't do anything.
We'll find out what happens today, and if it even lingers on into the weekend, we'll stay on top of it. On to the crazy martini now. And, Jim, we poked a little scorn at Republicans yesterday for being irresponsible with the Obama-Netanyahu transcript. Today, we focused the crazy martini on a specific Republican candidate who, at this point, probably won't end up in Congress. This is a guy named Carl Domino. He's running in Florida's 18th Congressional District. Used to be represented by Alan West. Now it's represented by Democrat Patrick Murphy. And here is his idea. He's proposing the Fix Congress First Act if he gets elected. His plan is to have every person in Congress be paid the median income in their district. So if you represent Beverly Hills or, in his case, Palm Beach, Florida, hey, that's great. But if you represent the inner city, well, you're probably looking at about 20, 30 grand a year.
Greg, this is perhaps the most distilled essence of ill-informed populism that we're going to encounter this year. Because, you tell those guys, you show them, you know, you only get paid when your constituents are getting paid. And if your constituents aren't doing well, you don't get to do well. How do you like them apples, Congress? There are a couple of problems here. One is that, as you noted, first of all, Domino would do pretty well. Basically, you'd say, all right, the members of Congress representing rich districts get paid more than the members of Congress representing poor districts. Why? We would say, well, you made the mistake of representing poor people, so we're going to punish you. We're going to cut your pay. The idea, and I've been arguing with a couple people on Twitter with this, is like, well, this is basically going to send a message to members of Congress that they can't do well unless their constituents do well. Except the problem is that it's not like members of Congress control the median income in their district. In fact, I'm not even sure how much they can influence it. Now, to the extent they can influence it, what is the one thing a member of Congress could do, Greg, that would probably boost the median income pretty quickly?
Pay their district staff more?
Oh, there you go. That's one idea. The other thing I was going to say is pork barrel spending, right?
Sure.
Creates jobs. It's great and all that stuff. So it's a formula for pork, if anything. Right now, members of Congress get paid the same. You get paid a little bit more if you're in leadership. Actually, I guess the top leaders get paid considerably more. And they all get a certain budget for things like travel and things like that. And that's based on a formula, which is how far is your district from Washington, D.C. and things like that. But generally, they all get paid roughly the same. Basically, the idea is that we hold you, the member of Congress, accountable for the median income in your district. And I don't really think that they control this. We're buying into this notion that of government being our caretaker, of government being our father figure, this all-powerful giver of good things, when we institute something like this. Now, if you want to say cut members of Congress pay, fine, no problem. I have no particular argument with that. Somebody had said, no, every member of Congress must get paid the lowest median income in the whole country. All these things feel good. But by the way, if you make it a really low-paying position, then it becomes a job that only rich people can afford to take, much like an unpaid internship or something like that. So think through the ramifications of this. This just seems like empty-headed, you know, populism. We're angry at Congress, so we'll show him. If you think about why are there, you know, parts of the country that are very poor, the fact that their members of Congress are overpaid is a non sequitur. I don't think congressional pay really has anything to do with median income in these poor parts of the country. And I think we'd be better off if we focused on the actual problems in those poor communities instead of saying, let's go get their members of Congress. They're the problem.
Probably a domino joke in there somewhere. But it is also pointed out that he is still an ally of Charlie Crist, even after all that Crist has done over the past few years. So if he doesn't make it to Congress, I don't think our hearts will be broken.
I guess he's waiting for Crist to stab him from the front.
Last word for the week, Jim.
Have a good one. The spike. Thank you for the setup there, Greg. I will see you next week, and well, hopefully a calm and smooth and neat week. And, you know, as my slogan for the week is, next week has to be better, right, Greg?
You would hope so.
At least until the Ebola arrives.
That's right. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you Monday on the 3 Martini Lunch.